watches I ride in this wind. On my good horse I call you my shiny black bears. To the playhouse of fortune to take the bright silver and gold you have taken from somebody.
You're tuned to WEOS Geneva, WXXE Fenner Syracuse, 88.1 Ithaca Community Radio, Free Radio Santa Cruz, KRFP Moscow, Free Radio Olympia, KQRP Salida, WGDR Plainfield, KWMD Kasilof Anchorage, WZKW Kingsville, KOWA Olympia, WRFN Nashville, WUOW Oneonta, KRBS Oroville, WKNH Keene, Radio Veronica US, WYQZ Warrenton Bealeton, KSOW Cottage Grove, or WMRW Warren. This is Unwelcome Guests. I'm Lynn Gary. The riots over the spiraling prices of food that have been taking place globally highlight that the problem of hunger is mostly one of power and property, law and the market. The reality is that the people who run governments and control corporations mostly don't care if some people starve. I can make that bald-faced statement because, if they did care, human societies would be ordered in such a way as to guarantee that food was shared out so everyone could eat, in proportion to the success of the harvest. Even as people are literally eating dirt in some places, tons of uneaten food are being thrown away in other places. There are a variety of reasons for the increase of hunger in the world, but chief among them are the destruction of subsistence farming by agribusiness and acts and policies of states that destroy people's ability to maintain their land base. One of the biggest lies told about hunger is that it is a problem of technology. The spider at the center of that web of lies is the biotech industry. Biotech corporations promise such things as food, health, and hope, but deliver the opposite. They patent and thus control the food supply. They poison our environment and make people sick. They create misery and despair, all in the service of the bottom line. This week on the program, I'm going to play a radio adaptation of a new film titled The World According to Monsanto, a documentary that Americans won't ever see, by French journalist and documentarian Marie-Monique Robin. The claim of Monsanto is that their patented GM seeds and their bovine growth hormone will increase production of agricultural products to such an extent that worldwide hunger and poverty will be eradicated. This film lays bare the falsity of that claim in every respect. You may recall a few years ago, the biotech industry waged a public relations blitz over its product called Golden Rice, a rice genetically engineered to contain vitamin A. They claimed this would solve the problem of blindness caused by vitamin A deficiency in the developing world. It takes a kind of blindness in the media not to ask why is it that so many people have nothing to eat with their rice, such as a carrot, a sweet potato, a cup of spinach, or a host of other fruits, vegetables, and meats that contain vitamin A, nor why these vitamin-deficient people can't get a bottle of supplements. I was easily able to find a retail outlet selling a supplement providing the daily allowance of vitamins A and D for about a penny a day. The problem is that the people who don't have vitamin A also have neither land nor money. It's not a problem requiring a technological solution, but a political one. The amazing array of domesticated food plants we have is the direct result of the gift economy. People over hundreds of generations have saved the best seeds from their harvests and shared them with others. The corporate system of patents and so-called intellectual property results in less variety and more scarcity and tasteless and nutritionally impoverished foodstuffs, though it yields greater profits for fewer people. The documentary will take most of the program, and I'll supplement it with some related information following its conclusion.
Monsanto's GMOs have invaded the planet, but no ag industry product in history has ever incited as much controversy and passion. Why? What's at stake with GMOs? And could the company's past shed some light on what the company is or claims to be today? Founded in St. Louis, Missouri in 1901, it was not always an agricultural company. It was one of the largest chemical companies of the 20th century.
Chemistry is working for you, and very likely Monsanto is working for you. Monsanto, where creative chemistry works wonders for you.
The wonders boasted about in this commercial made Monsanto one of the most controversial companies in the industrial era. Agent Orange, aspartame, bovine growth hormone, PCBs. These chemically created oils used worldwide as coolants and lubricants in electrical equipment were the jewels in Monsanto's crown for over 50 years. They were called Arachlor in the United States, Pyrrolin in France, and Clofen in Germany, until they were banned in the early 1980s. Monsanto PCB. A Washington Post article from 2002. Monsanto hid decades of pollution. It happened in Anniston, Alabama.
Terry was my baby brother. He died in 1971 from a cancer of the brains, or a tumor of the brains, cancer of the lungs, and hers of the heart. He was 16. In the last 3 years, I have lost more friends. They died from illnesses, cancer, sugar diabetes, hepatitis, all these different ailments that comes with PCBs, and they have been related to PCB. Monsanto Road. This is all just a black area of minorities that live in this area, but every one of these homes was like contaminated. They just cleaned that yard up over there to the right about 6 months ago. These was all homes. These people lived here. And they had to move. The houses was torn down. My brother fell dead right around the house. This is the house I was raised in. See this grass right here? They buried PCBs over here. Monsanto got permission to bury PCBs in Anniston. And this is Snow Creek right here where they put the cement in here. It comes from the plant discharging to PCBs all the way down through here. And it was poisoning. They never told anybody, but they told the state. The state didn't tell us.
PCB Monsanto knew, but what exactly did they know? An environmental organization in Washington, D.C., headed by Ken Cook, has put internal Monsanto files online. Most of them are classified confidential, FYI and destroy. 1937, exposure to PCBs provokes systemic toxic effects and acne forms skin eruption. In 1961, two workers developed hepatitis symptoms after a pipe broke in a factory using PCBs. In 1966, Monsanto scientists placed fish in Snow Creek's water. All were dead in 3.5 minutes. Pollution, a letter addressed to sales executives in 1970.
This is the one that really tells you the story.
Ken Cook, president of the Environmental Working Group.
They're saying, we can't afford to lose $1 of business. Their neighbors in Anniston were not told about the poisoning that they were inflicting upon them because they didn't want to lose $1. It was only when lawyers went to court on behalf of people in Anniston and forced the company through the legal system to disclose these internal secret documents that we knew what they knew. They knew the truth from the very beginning. They lied about it. They hid the truth from their neighbors. They hid the truth, in many cases, from the government authorities. And when they did share information with government authorities that should have been acted upon, the government authorities, instead of siding with the people who were being poisoned, sided with the company. They sided with Monsanto. It was outrageous, absolutely unforgivable.
Oh, these are all your medicines?
Yeah. Well, no, they ain't all of them. I got some more here.
How much you have in you?
63.8. In the blood.
In the blood.
David Baker.
If they took a fatty biopsy of him now, he probably would top the scales of about 3,000 or 4,000 parts per billion or more.
And which is a level acceptable? I mean,
acceptable is 2 parts per billion. That's the standard all around the world. But these people, we have more in our bloods and in our body than actually anywhere else in the world.
Uh-huh. It's usual here to speak about his PCB level.
We all talks about it because it became a household word now. Kids used to run up to me, Mr. Baker, I got tested. I had 3 parts per billion in my blood. How long do you think I got?
But that's a horrible story. But what do scientists think about it? On the web, you can find numerous articles concerning the effects of PCBs on human health. David Carpenter is one of the most qualified specialists in the field. He carried out the testing for the Anniston residents.
We all have PCBs in our bodies. The polar bears and the penguins have PCBs. And what has happened is in the past, there were a few sites where PCBs were released. But over time, they've gone into the air, they've gone into the water, they've transported, so the whole world is now contaminated with PCBs. The issue is that many diseases are caused by PCB exposure. The one everyone knows about is cancer.
Meeting of Anniston residents opposed to PCBs.
My test results stated that I had 202 parts per billion in my system.
Women that get pregnant and have PCBs in their body will have a child with a reduced IQ.
29.6.
PCBs cause reduced thyroid function.
All of 1,800.
PCBs interfere with sex hormones.
I swear, just let me pass away. Pass away in peace. He's going to pay, I say it then. He's going to pay for the way that he has done to us.
In 2001, 20,000 Anniston residents filed two lawsuits against Monsanto. Monsanto and its subsidiary, Solucia, settled by paying $700 million to compensate the victims, to clean up the site, and to build a specialized hospital. But no Monsanto executive was ever sued.
Ken Cook.
Under American law, in most instances, it's very rare for executives or officials in these companies to be held criminally responsible. So we have the civil system, the civil courts. We make them pay. And the truth of the matter is, in most instances, the price these companies pay decades later is a fraction of their profits. And this is why it pays to keep these problems secret. And it makes you wonder what they might be keeping secret now. I have to say, we would never trust a company like Monsanto to tell the truth about a pollution problem or about a product. We would never trust them.
Ken Cook says we would never trust a company like Monsanto. So what about Roundup, the world's favorite herbicide used by gardeners and farmers alike? What is it exactly? It's the brand name Monsanto gave to glyphosate, a so-called non-selective or total herbicide, because it destroys all plants. First sold in 1974, it owes its great success to Monsanto's unwavering claims that it is biodegradable and good for the environment.
This is a commercial for Monsanto's Roundup herbicide that aired in France in the year 2000. It featured an animated dog who was shown applying Roundup to weeds covering a buried bone. This is Roundup, the first biodegradable herbicide. It destroys weeds from the inside down to the roots, while leaving both the soil and Rex's bone pollution-free. Roundup, the weed killer that makes you want to kill weeds.
Roundup biodegradable. Ken Cook was right. The company was found guilty of false advertising. Twice. The first time was in New York in 1996. And the second was in France just last year. The judges found that the wording biodegradable leaves the soil clean and respects the environment were false advertising. Especially since, according to tests performed by Monsanto itself, only 2% of the product had broken down after 28 days. That's why Monsanto recently removed the word biodegradable from its containers. But that's not all. Many scientific studies have shown that Roundup is highly toxic. For example, Roundup provokes cell division dysfunction, a study by Professor Robert Bellet. Professor Bellet works for the National Center for Scientific Research and the Pierre and Marie Curie Institute in France. He has studied the effects of Roundup on fertilized sea urchin eggs.
The big surprise was that Roundup has an effect on cell division. We saw very quickly that Roundup affected a key process in cell division. Not the cell division mechanisms themselves, but those which control cell division. You have to understand how cells become cancerous. In the beginning, all cells are benign, and then at a certain point, modifications take place in the cells that make them unstable from a genetic point of view. This is the first malfunction that we observed with Roundup. It is for that reason that we consider that Roundup provokes the first stages that lead to cancer. We're careful not to say it provokes cancer, because we won't see the cancers develop for 30 or 40 years. It was immediately clear how important these findings were for product users, especially since the tested doses were well below those which people normally use, and we said to ourselves, gosh, we really have to let the public know about the dangers as quickly as we can. And I thought the best way to do that was to talk to my administration. But there, I was shocked, very, very shocked, because I was told, ordered, rather, not to communicate our findings due to the GMO question lurking in the background.
What an incredible account. Roundup's toxicity was hidden to protect the development of GMOs. So let's go back to the creation of GMOs. According to Monsanto's site, Roundup Ready soybeans, introduced in 1996, were the first bioengineered crop to be approved in the United States. Farmers using these seeds belong to the American Soybean Association, whose address is on Monsanto's site. John Hoffman is its vice president and an ardent biotechnology advocate.
In the spring, I will go out and spray one pass of Roundup to burn down the weeds that are growing in the early spring. And about 6 or 7 weeks later, I'll spray a second pass of Roundup. And that controls the weeds for the year. Before we had Roundup technology, this field would have had weeds. We would have had to walk through and pull the excess weeds by hand. It was labor intensive. So the Roundup Ready system saves me time and it saves me money.
It seems Monsanto's new wonder has what it takes to entice farmers. But how does it work? How can the soybean plants survive being sprayed with Roundup? This is a soybean cell. The core of this cell contains its DNA, in which the bean's genetic structure is encoded. In order to create its GMOs, Monsanto breaks the species barrier using a Roundup-resistant gene harvested from a bacterium. This gene is placed on microscopic particles of gold, which are fired into the soybean cells with a gene gun. The gene penetrates the DNA and creates a protein, making the plant resistant to Roundup. When the herbicide is sprayed on the crop, it kills all the weeds, leaving the soybean plants intact. One must admit that the process is an incredible technological feat. But these soybeans engineered to withstand such a powerful herbicide are destined for our dinner plates. They must have been thoroughly tested before being put on the market. Who was the Secretary of Agriculture at the time? Dan Glickman, Bill Clinton's Ag Secretary from 1995 to 2000.
What I found in the early years I was involved in the regulation of biotechnology, that there was a general feeling in agribusiness and inside our government in the U.S. that if you weren't marching lockstep forward in favor of rapid approvals of biotech products, rapid approvals of GMO crops, then somehow you were anti-science and anti-progress. Well, I think that, frankly, there were a lot of folks in industrial agriculture who didn't want as much analysis as probably we should have had because they had made a huge amount of investments in the product. I mean, I think that, and certainly when I became secretary, given the fact that I was in charge of the department regulating agriculture, I had a lot of pressure on me not to push the issue too far, so to speak. But I would say even when I opened my mouth in the Clinton administration, I got slapped around a little bit by not only the industry, but also some of the people even in the administration. In fact, I made a speech once saying that we needed to be more, we needed more thoughtfully think through the regulatory issues on GMOs. And I had some people within the Clinton administration, particularly on in the U.S. trade area, that were very upset with me. They said, how could you in agriculture be questioning our regulatory regime?
In a nutshell, in the United States, the Secretary of Agriculture doesn't stand a chance against the multinationals. But just how are GMOs regulated in the United States? The most crucial policy on the subject was published by the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, which is legally responsible for regulating the safety of food and medicine. Title: Foods Derived from New Plant Varieties. Date: May 29, 1992. Principle 1. Foods derived from genetic modification are regulated within the existing framework that applied to foods developed by traditional plant breeding. Obviously, the FDA decided not to create a special category for GMOs. For further information, contact James Mariansky, who headed the biotechnology department at the time.
Basically, the government had taken a decision that it would not create new laws, that it felt there were already sufficient laws in place that had enough authority for the agencies to deal with new technologies.
That means the White House asks the agency to write a policy where GMOs should not be submitted to a specific regulatory regime, but it's not based on scientific data. It's a political decision?
Yes, it was a political decision. It was a very broad decision that didn't apply to just foods. It applied to all products of biotechnology.
Unbelievable. James Mariansky admits that GMO regulation was based on politics rather than science. How exactly did they justify their decision? Principle 2. The components of food as a result of genetic modification of a plant will be the same as or substantially similar to substances commonly found in food. In other words, the FDA considers that a genetically modified plant is equivalent to its conventional counterpart. What they call the principle of substantial equivalence has been adopted around the world, and it's at the heart of the debate between biotech supporters and GMO foes.
How could the FDA decide that a GMO crop is the same as a conventional plant?
James Mariansky, Ph.D., Biotechnology Coordinator, FDA, 1985 to 2006.
What we do know is that the genes that are being introduced currently, to date, using biotechnology, produce proteins that are very similar to proteins that we've consumed for many centuries.
That's the FDA's official position on the matter, which was toppled by Jeffrey Smith, author of several books on GMOs. Michael Hansen, scientific expert for the Consumers Union of the United States. And writer Jeremy Rifkin, who was the first to denounce the principle of substantial equivalence.
Jeffrey Smith, author.
The reason why GM crops are here is based on a deception that occurred in the FDA. They said that these foods are not different. They use the word substantially equivalent. They use the word not meaningfully or uniformly different. And what that turned into was a terminology called generally recognized as safe, or GRAS. Typically, if something is to be considered generally recognized as safe, it needs lots of peer-reviewed published studies and an overwhelming consensus among the scientific community. With GM crops, they had neither.
James Mariansky.
What FDA was saying was if you introduce a gene into a plant, that gene is DNA, and we've consumed DNA. We have a long history of consuming DNA, and we can establish that that is GRAS.
We were trying to say that these things should be considered food additives.
Michael Hansen, Ph.D., Senior Staff Scientist, Consumers Union.
When you want to put a new coloring agent in a food, the tiniest bit of coloring agent or a preservative or some other tiny chemical, that's considered a food additive, and you have to go through all these procedures to show it's that it meets the criterion of reasonable certainty of no harm. But when you genetically engineer a food which can cause untold differences in that plant, they don't require anything.
Jeremy Rifkin, President, Foundation for Economic Trends.
Here in Washington, if you were to have an evening and go out and get a drink at one of the local haunts where all the lobbyists hang out, everybody would laugh about this. They all know this was a joke, this substantial equivalency. This was simply a way to paper over the need for these companies, especially Monsanto, to move their products into the environment quickly with the least amount of government interference. And I should say they were very, very good at getting their interest expressed.
James Mariansky.
I remember meetings that we had where the Monsanto scientists met with the FDA scientists, and they went through the kinds of modifications that they were making and how those were being done. And basically what they were also saying to FDA is, how will these products be regulated?
Jeremy Rifkin.
I have never seen a situation where one company could have so much overwhelming influence at the highest levels of regulatory decision-making as the example of Monsanto with its GM food policy in the government.
Exceptional news footage actually shows George Bush Sr. visiting Monsanto's research facility 9 years before Roundup Ready soybeans were first sold.
What I'd like to do today is show you some of the steps we go through when we're moving genes from one organism into another. And you'll actually be doing the very little manipulations we do in the laboratory, where we take DNA, cut it apart, mix different pieces together, and then rejoin them, splice them back together. This tube contains DNA that was made from a bacterium. DNA would look the same whether it was from a plant or
what
an
are we
animal.
Saying here? Oh, I see. And this will lead you to do what? To have a stronger plant or a plant that's resists
herbicide? In this case, it resists the herbicide.
I see.
We have a fabulous herbicide.
This is a chemical that will...
When George Bush Sr. was Ronald Reagan's vice president, and deregulation was this Republican administration's watchword, the intention was to boost industry by eliminating what White House hardliners called bureaucratic hurdles, like health and environmental safety testing, which were Monsanto's key problems.
we have before USDA right now a request to test this for the first time on a farm in Illinois this year. And
yeah, hallucinating about it with this and other here.
Yes,
and then the expense goes out and nothing happens because you can't.
Yeah, and I would say, quite frankly, we have no complaint about the way USDA is handling it. They're going through an orderly process. They're making sure that they deal with these new things, they do them properly. And now, if we're waiting until September and we don't have our authorization, we may say something different.
Call me. We're in a dereg business.
In 1988, when George Bush Sr. was elected President of the United States, Dan Quayle became the new Vice President. 4 years later, he announced the American policy concerning GMOs, drafted just as Monsanto had wanted.
We are taking this step as part of the President's Regulatory Relief Initiative, now in its second phase. The United States is already the world leader in biotechnology, and we want to keep it that way. In 1991 alone, it was a $4 billion industry. It should reach at least $50 billion by the year 2000, as long as we resist the spread of unnecessary regulation.
Do you think it was really a conspiracy?
Jeffrey Smith.
A conspiracy is a strong word. From a corporate standpoint, it was a brilliantly executed takeover.
Jeremy Rifkin.
Early on, a gentleman by the name of Michael Taylor became the deputy administrator of the Food and Drug Administration right at the time that they were about to set out their policy.
Who is Michael Taylor? On the internet, only a single image remains of the man who once wielded his power so discreetly. Today he heads a foundation called Resources for the Future.
Hello, Marie Monique speaking.
Hello, it's Mike Taylor.
My questions are about your role. I mean, when you were working at the FDA, before being hired by the FDA, you worked as an attorney for Monsanto during 7 years, didn't you?
Well, I was a partner in a law firm of which Monsanto was a client, and I worked on some Monsanto matters, yes.
Uh-huh. And apparently, if I understood well what I read, and the FDA created a new position for you, Deputy Commissioner for Policy?
Well,
because there was a special need at that time at the FDA because of the new GMOs?
It had nothing to do with GMOs.
Ah.
Nothing at all to do with GMOs. I wasn't the author of these policies. But that's just false.
Michael Hansen.
He moved over to the FDA in July of 1991. Up until that time, he was at a law firm called King & Spalding. His personal clients included not only Monsanto, but the International Food Biotechnology Council. And he had drafted for them a proposal for how they would like to see genetically engineered foods regulated. And if you look at the proposal that was written for IFBC, that was Michael Taylor's, with the final one that was published, it looks very, very similar. So if he didn't write it, it looks like somebody took what he wrote and changed it slightly for the policy.
James Mariansky.
Mr. Taylor was the deputy commissioner at the time, and he provided the leadership for the project and served as the chief, the sort of the lead policy person in terms of making sure that the project got done.
Michael Hansen.
So Monsanto played that game very well, both the political game and the regulatory game. They played a key role in bovine growth hormone, in getting that thing approved, and also in how genetic engineering was dealt with.
Michael Hansen has just mentioned bovine growth hormone. What's that? It's a transgenic hormone that's injected into cows, increasing dairy production by 20%. It would be an understatement to say that it had critics. The hormone threatens our health. Deadly poison. Manipulation. Call RBGH for a recombinant bovine growth hormone. Monsanto began selling it to dairy farmers in 1994 under the brand name Posilac.
Monsanto promotional film.
Posilac is the single most tested new product in history. You'll soon see the dramatic results Posilac can offer you.
In 1985, Monsanto submitted Posilac to the FDA for market approval. The experts at the FDA's Center for Veterinary Medicine reviewed the studies that the company had carried out on experimental herds. At the FDA, the veterinarian in charge of reviewing the data was Richard Burrows. In an interview, he stated that agency officials had suppressed and manipulated data.
The data that they came in with lacked a lot of insight into the dairy industry. They didn't ask crucial questions about these diseases, and that is mastitis, which is infection of the mammary gland, and reproductive problems. So when the first data came in and that was missing, I said, all right, guys, you need to go back and get information. So that set it back probably 2 or 3 years.
Did you warn the FDA about your concerns?
They pretty much just sidetracked me. They pulled in, my boss pulled in other people that were closer to him, and I saw less and less of the data. Even the things I had asked for to be done, I didn't like the mastitis studies. I never really got to see a lot of that because they figured, well, if you're in the way, we'll get you out of the way. So they sidetracked me. Eventually, I was fired. One day, I was escorted to the door and told that was it. I was done.
Have you been threatened?
Yes, mainly by the lawyers for Monsanto, because when I was going for my appeal, they told my lawyer that if I went in and revealed any company secrets in my defense, that they would sue me.
In the end, the FDA was forced to reinstate this conscientious veterinarian. He eventually resigned, disheartened. On the internet, there's also talk about files that were stolen from the FDA and sent to Dr. Samuel Epstein, who heads the Cancer Prevention Coalition. In 1990, Samuel Epstein published an article in The Milkweed, the standard for dairy reporting, edited by Pete Hardin. The scoop was based on the secret documents that the two men scrutinized.
One morning, I think in October of that year, I came into my office and found a great big box of documents. And it came from Washington, but no indication as to who sent it. This was a box of files of all Monsanto records which had been submitted to the FDA on the veterinary tests.
The former U.S. Trade Ambassador, Mickey Cantor, ended up on Monsanto's board. Supreme Court Judge Clarence Thomas used to work for Monsanto.
Monsanto revolving doors. The state of affairs in 1999 includes Linda Fisher moves from the Environmental Protection Agency to Monsanto, Michael Friedman from the FDA to Monsanto, Marsha Hale and Josh King from the White House to Monsanto, Margaret Miller from Monsanto to the FDA, William Ruckelshaus from the EPA to Monsanto, and let's not forget Michael Taylor, who went back and forth several times.
Once your mission carried out by the FDA, you became Monsanto's vice president for public policy.
Right.
So there's no conflict of interest for you.
No, and again, the rules are the rules, and I played within the rules. I think in terms of public acceptance, it's been one blunder after another. If you're trying to have a strategy for having the public understand and accept the new technology, having the first application of it be related to milk, which we already have more than we need, it created, it helped create a climate of
Suspicion.
I think the idea that companies are not required in every case of a GMO to submit the product to FDA, such as is required in Europe, I think that from a public confidence, public acceptance standpoint, that's not a sufficient system. I personally have said that Congress should change the law. Congress should create a mandatory notification system that ensures that every product is looked at by FDA and that FDA makes a safety judgment about every product.
That's some very compelling testimony. It seems that Michael Taylor has qualms about the policy he signed in 1992. What about the FDA's own scientists? Was there a consensus on the GMO regulations? FDA documents show they ignored GMO safety warnings from their own scientists, written by Steve Drucker. Lawyer Steven Drucker represents a coalition of nonprofit associations. He sued the FDA, forcing it to declassify its internal files on GMOs.
We received over 44,000 pages from the FDA's own files, and they revealed that the FDA has been lying to the world since 1992, if not before. But they continue to lie. They are still lying. They claim that there's an overwhelming consensus in the scientific community that genetically engineered foods are as safe as their conventionally produced counterparts. And they claim that there has been sufficient data to back up this consensus. Both of those claims are blatant lies. There are several examples. For instance, Dr. Louis Priebel of the FDA's microbiology group wrote, quote, "There's a profound difference between the types of unexpected effects from traditional breeding and genetic engineering," unquote. Then Dr. Priebel added in his memo that some of the effects of genetic engineering may be more hazardous. The concern expressed by the FDA's various scientific experts was so clear and unmistakable that the FDA official whose job it was to track and summarize the scientist input, Dr. Linda Call, wrote a memo to the FDA biotechnology coordinator, Dr. James Mariansky.
According to the internal FDA's files, which have been declassified now, there were many in-house critics, I mean, among the scientists of the FDA, about the proposed policy. I have, for instance, a memorandum sent to you by Linda Call.
Right.
She stated, "The processes of genetic engineering and traditional breeding are different.
Traditional breeding are different, and according to the technical experts in the agency,
they lead to different risks."
Different risks.
James Mariansky.
The point was that we had many people with many different views. Linda Call, of course, wrote that in her memo. But in fact, when we finished the policy, all the scientists agreed with the policy. Now, FDA, of course, looked at the use of genetic engineering and has no information that simply the use of the techniques creates products that differ in safety or quality.
Even before the consistent warnings in the memos from the FDA's own scientists, the FDA had very clear warning because the very first genetically engineered food supplement that came to market in the United States caused a major epidemic.
Do you remember what happened in 1989 with L-tryptophan? Do you remember?
Yes.
It was a bioengineered amino acid. We know very well what's amino acid and...
Right.
That killed dozens of people and made hundreds and hundreds sick.
It caused an epidemic of an unusual disease called EMS.
Right.
And how many people died?
Right, but we have many...
37, and more than 1,000 people disabled. Do you remember?
I do remember.
And you said, according to FDA administrative record, we do not yet know the cause of EMS, nor can we rule out the engineering of the organism. Did you say that, what I read?
Yes.
Amazing. James Mariansky can't rule out the possibility that it's the genetic manipulation itself that triggers unexpected side effects. But he did nothing. Have any independent scientists investigated this question, which is crucial for consumers? Arpad Pusztai, world-renowned scientist, lost his job when he warned about GE foods. 1998. Arpad Pusztai worked for the Rowett Institute in Scotland. At the Ministry of Agriculture's request, he led a study on genetically modified potatoes with a budget of over 2 million euros and a staff of 30 researchers to prepare the arrival of GMOs in Great Britain.
We were all enthusiastic about it. I was enthusiastic about it. The ministry thought that if we did this study, looking at all aspects, then it would be an endorsement of GM. And when they introduce it, they would say that the foremost laboratory in Europe, nutritional laboratory, had looked at them and they found them all right.
Arpad Pusztai specializes in lectins. These proteins function as an insecticide protecting plants against aphids. Rowett scientists had created potatoes that were resistant to aphids and into which they introduced a snowdrop gene, which produces the lectin in question. Beforehand, they verified that in their naturally occurring state, lectins themselves do not pose a health risk. The genetically modified potatoes were tested on rats.
It had twofold effects. First, it started to increase a proliferative response in the gut. And that you don't like because this is possibly, I'm not saying that it is cancerous, but what it does, it can have an adjuvant effect on any chemically induced tumor. The other thing is the immune system was suddenly got into high gear. And that was, we don't know whether it's good or bad, but it certainly did recognize the GM potatoes as alien. And we were convinced that this insertion is causing the problem and not the transgene. As I said, the transgene, when we did it in isolation, even at 800-fold concentration, didn't do any harm. It was a very important point because the American FDA is going on by about a neutral technology. And what we did say and what we did publish was actually corroborated, confirmed that it was not the transgene which was the problem, but it was the technology.
While the first shipments of genetically modified soybeans were arriving in Great Britain, Arpad Pusztai's superiors authorized him to be interviewed by the BBC.
As a scientist actively working on the field, I find that it's very, very unfair to use our fellow citizens as guinea pigs. They will never forgive me for that. Monsanto did see the importance of our findings. Don't worry about it. Even before the broadcast went out, they already knew because the Scottish Crop Research Institute did get a lot of money from Monsanto, and they were not slow to understand the implications.
The day after the interview's broadcast, Arpad Pusztai was fired and the research team dismantled. Dr. Stanley Ewan was in charge of evaluating the impact of GM potatoes on the rat's internal organs. He no longer has any illusions about scientific independence.
I was extremely, well, angry and very, very concerned. It's like your whole world is disappearing under your feet. What's going on?
But they start to discredit Stanley as well. It's not just Arpad and me. Mm. Stanley was made to retire, and he was discredited at the university
as well.
Oh, yes.
It was very hard indeed.
Monday, it was wonderful work. Tuesday, it was rubbished. I had one or two ideas of what was happening, but a very imprecise idea until 8 years ago, almost exactly, I was at a dinner dance. And next to me at the top table was someone from the Rowett called Dutta Roy, who happened to say, I said, isn't it awful what's happening to Arpad? Yes, he said. And did you not know that there were not one, but two phone calls from Downing Street to the director? And then, of course, I saw clearly what was happening, that this was something sort of supranational, if you like, some pressure being put on Tony Blair's office to stop this work because it was perceived by the Americans to be harming their industrial base, the biotech industry, in other words.
The Arpad Pusztai scandal triggered a massive rejection of GMOs in Great Britain, led by Greenpeace. A year later, Robert Shapiro, Monsanto's CEO at the time, agreed to participate in a teleconference organized by the environmental organization. This is the only existing video footage of the former CEO. He was responsible for moving the company into the biotechnology era with its new slogan, Food, Health, and Hope.
Peter Melchett, Executive Director, Greenpeace, UK.
Monsanto made huge efforts to push its products in every direction with the full support of multinational food manufacturers, retailers, communications firms, regulators, even governments. You behave not as a company offering life and hope, but as bullies trying to force your products on us.
If I'm a bully, I don't feel that I'm a very successful bully. I want to start by emphasizing that biotechnology is a tool. Biotechnology in itself is neither good nor bad. It can be used well or it can be used badly. The products that are on the market have been reviewed through the regulatory processes that society has established in order to assure not only safety, but the environmental safety of the products themselves.
After 10 years on the market, Roundup Ready soybeans account for 90% of all the soybeans grown in the U.S. In fact, 70% of the food in American stores contains bioengineered elements. Unlike Europe, consumers cannot make an informed decision because GM labeling is forbidden, a direct consequence of the principle of substantial equivalence.
You know, I've got a soybean in my hand here. And
John Hoffman, Vice President, American Soybean Association.
I can eat this soybean. It's very safe, very safe.
James Mariansky.
I think FDA is confident that the soybean, in terms of food safety, is as safe as other varieties of soybean.
How is the FDA confident about that?
It's based on all the data that the company provided to FDA that was reviewed by FDA scientists. And so it's not in the company's interest to try to design a study in some way that would mask results.
How can James Mariansky be so sure? If I type in Monsanto falsified scientific studies, I get 174,000 hits. Among them, a report from the EPA of the United States. Monsanto accused of falsifying studies concerning the carcinogenicity of dioxin. The story began in Nitro, in a Monsanto factory that produced a powerful herbicide called 2,4,5-T. In 1949, an explosion in the factory provoked unexpected side effects. 228 workers developed an extremely disfiguring illness called chloracne. It's caused by dioxin, which is a highly toxic byproduct of 2,4,5-T. T was the main ingredient in Agent Orange, the defoliant used by the U.S. Army during the Vietnam War. During the war, 40 million liters of Agent Orange, containing 400 kilograms of pure dioxin, were sprayed on trees in southern Vietnam. 3 million people were contaminated, including thousands of American soldiers. Even some 40 years after the end of the war, dioxin continues to claim more victims. We know today that this poison provokes cancer and serious genetic malfunctions. All the profits went to down. All the profits went to down. In 1978, while American Vietnam veterans were suing the makers of Agent Orange, Monsanto sponsored studies on the long-term effects of dioxin.
We're the ones that are paying now. We're the
The company paid scientists to compare the health of workers who had been exposed during the Nitro plant's accident 30 years prior to the health of non-exposed workers. There are two experts on the subject. William Sanjur, who led the Toxic Waste Division of the Environmental Protection Agency, and Gerson Smoger, a lawyer who represents Vietnam veterans.
Dr. Kay Jenkins, a colleague of mine at EPA, wrote a memorandum pointing out that allegations had been made that those studies, some of those studies that Monsanto had conducted, were flawed, and if they were done correctly, would have reached just the opposite result of that Monsanto had. The Monsanto studies showed that dioxin was not a human carcinogen.
That means they had the data first, and then they manipulated how they were going to look at that data to come up with the conclusion they want. It's absolutely, you never do a study that way. Never.
Gerson Smoger, lawyer representing Vietnam veterans.
And they did it absolutely wrong, they achieved what they wanted. And it came out later that there were people that had cancer that in one of these two studies were listed as being exposed to dioxin, and the same five people in another study were listed as not being exposed. When you put all these cancers into the unexposed, then it looked like the unexposed people were getting as much cancer as the exposed, and they said, "Well, there's no difference. See, they're the same."
So then thousands and thousands of veterans were disallowed benefits because of exposure to Agent Orange.
So all policy was affected by those studies for 7 to 9 years in this country.
Being a good scientist and a good EPA employee, and someone, by the way, who's quite fearless, Kate Jenkins wrote a memorandum to the EPA Science Advisory Board asking them to review these two studies to see if they were correctly done. The fact is, there was no investigation of Monsanto. It didn't exist. Nobody investigated those studies. Nobody, period. What they investigated was Kate Jenkins, the whistleblower. They made her life a hell. They harassed her. They changed her jobs. They persecuted the poor woman.
If you think of Monsanto today, they're telling that their GMOs, for instance, are sound and safe. Do you trust the company?
I wouldn't believe a word that company says. Nothing. I might trust some independent source who investigated their claims, depending on who that independent source was and how good they are and how independent they are.
Precisely. In order to prove the safety of Roundup Ready soybeans, Monsanto carried out a study which was published in 1996 in a well-respected scientific journal. The study was supposed to assess the effects of GM soybeans on animal health, specifically on rats. This study was thoroughly reviewed by both a Danish scientist, now deceased, and the Norwegian specialist, Ian Prime.
I'm afraid to say, value this study very poorly indeed. It's very disappointing, very disappointing. Especially because this paper sort of served as a basis for the whole principle of substantial equivalence. I can just cite, which is again a bit surprising, although the animal feeding studies provide some reassurance that no major changes occurred. Now, some reassurance, now that's good enough. I want 100% reassurance, not just some reassurance. They talk, for example, about the, on page 723, except for the darker brown colour, livers appeared normal at necropsy. I mean, you can't do that without looking inside. You have to look at the content inside the liver, taking sections, showing under the microscope that there is no difference. They've used, for example, older rats. Obviously, again, if you want to avoid any problems, okay, use an adult. But if you want to see if any changes are evident, then you should use younger individuals, of course. In some ways, you can say it's bad science because a lot of the data that they should have shown isn't shown.
Did you try, for instance, to get access to the raw data?
I didn't. A colleague of mine did and spent quite a frustrating length of time going through different offices and so on. But finally, the answer was no.